Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome to the SEO Insider. We are so pleased to have Conrad Sam here today. He is one of my favorite guys in the space. He cut his teeth at Avvo and is now the founder and CEO of Mockingbird. Welcome, Conrad.
Hey, Seth. Thanks for having me. You were one of the first, like, there have always been people going to legal marketing play things and playing that game, but it wasn't until I saw you at the kind of SEO nerd events where things got really real. I was like, oh, not only is legal bigger, but you know, there are a couple players in the game that are taking it super seriously. And you and I used to run into each other with like SMX, MozCon. In fact, I've got my MozCon shirt, MozCon 2014. I'm wearing it today. So, it's now expected. When I started, I had to tell lawyers what SEO stood for. But like, it's now expected. And you were one of the forefront, you were at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun. And one of those life moments when I would go to legal conferences, ones that we go to now, as agency owners. And I said, hey, I don't want to get the stuff spoon fed to me. I want it from the fire hose. And, you know, got out to Vegas to those back rooms where, you sort of learn the inner workings. But look, when I first met you, you were the rock star because you were the cause celeb at Avvo. Tell me about that experience. Like, not only what it was like there, but in hindsight, knowing what you know now, it just seems like such an incredible opportunity to see legal marketing from so many different perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, my first, this goes back to 2006. And back in 2006, the number of people who really knew SEO was very limited. It was a small number, mostly Canadians. It was men and women, young and old. A lot of people made a ton of money, peddling what we call the three P's, porn, pill, and poker. And that was, that was the ins and outs of what happened. And the cool thing for me was I was able to get to a point where I had access to some of the best SEO minds. Like, I got to work with Todd Friesen. I got to work with Vanessa Fox. There's a ton of people who knew their stuff in and out who weren't legally focused, but it was a really, really inviting open community. And I basically got tutored by the best of the best, It sounds like I'm name dropping, and I don't mean to be, but it was just a very, very different egalitarian group of nerdy people who helped each other. And it was awesome.
Getting to watch Mark's rise with this incredible platform, seeing him in a little room in DC with 20 people yelling at him about what he was doing was unethical and wasn't going to work. You're sitting there behind the scenes and said, oh, user generated content. That's pretty cool. A combination of things that were done. Talk to me about some of the things that, you got to test there or try out there. What were the things that you hit home runs with when you were there? And what are the things that crashed and burned?
Yeah. I mean, the obvious thing that was the home run was link building. And I think at that point in time, the notion that link building was a job, like, that was weird, but it was much more than a job. It was, the key to everything. And it's still, in many cases, from an SEO perspective, really is. But we were able, Avvo the lawsuit was not unexpected. The first lawsuit, the outrage was not unexpected. Like, it wasn't like Mark went in like an idiot. He knew this was going to happen. The thing that Mark understood and the SEO strategists early on understood about Avvo was that was all beneficial. Like, there's no,
right,
there's
free
no
press.
Such thing as bad press, but there's also there is such thing as a bad link. But in this
category, and there are bad lawsuits, but as long as it's curable, later on, well after you were gone, were really the more sensitive lawsuits dealing with fee sharing. Before that, it was sort of like this nebulous advertising world, which is going to work its way out. It's heading that way, whether the state wants to believe it or not.
But all of that stuff, like, even like, take the bad lawsuit, like the two ding dongs from I want to say St. Louis, the gun-toting lawyers with the protesters, right?
Right.
Their backlink profile is awesome now.
Exactly. Right? Like, no. In fact, one lawyer that I know who's done better than most, you know, had a huge cyber attack against him. He lived through it. Not enough of it was discounted by Google. He wasn't penalized. You know, history is written by the victors.
Yeah. So, I mean, that very much happened. You know, so Ava went along. The link building, we killed it. I mean, we were so much better at link building and associating PR to link building, and this is going to come across as super arrogant, which I am arrogant, but in this case, I'm not being arrogant. It was just everyone else was so bad, right?
Not only were you doing stuff, and not only was it a real thing that was cutting edge and getting real national press, right? You didn't have to link build. It was literally, you might have to call up and get the link, but these articles were being written left and right. Talk to me a little bit about sort of just the use of the badge, because that's something that other people have caught on to since, but it seems like you guys pioneered that.
Well, we certainly pioneered it in legal. I'll tell you, because I built and designed the badge. There were, you know, there are actually, I don't know if it still looks like this, but there are actually two links in the badge.
Right.
And the first link...
I always thought that was genius of you.
Well, the first link goes to the lawyer's profile, and it takes up the majority of the space in that badge, and it goes to that lawyer's profile. And the downside for lawyers, and this happens all the time, I still see this, you put the badge on your site, you stop paying Avvo, and now all of a sudden you're sending people from your own website to your Avvo profile where your competitors advertise on your own name, and you sent them to that advertisement, which is banana boat crazy stupid, but like that still happens. But the second link, I'm sure you don't know all the elements of this. The second link went to the search results page for what you do. So if you're
that's one of the reasons mine were self-made badges that didn't have the links in them.
Well, because so here's the piece that you don't know.
Okay.
We were able, when we created that badge. So sorry, let me explain the story to the listeners, and then I'll tell you what we did to manipulate it further. That link goes to, like, you know, the car accident.
Right, the page that's competing with you in the SERPs for your results.
That key page. So that SERP page on Avvo. So that was a big deal. We did a ton of work on that. But you could actually change the anchor text dynamically for that link on the badges, because it was a call to our servers. So I could then test out different anchor text on that badge that no one ever saw, right? And we could cycle that anchor text, and we could
No. What I'm saying is those in the know would just create a graphic that looked exactly the same and put it up there. Which is what you would advise me to do if, you know, so. But look, I got to think that half the valuation may have been that move, that was one of those things that created a juggernaut that, you know, was able to, like, that put you up there. And over the years, we kept hearing algorithm search, we want better and better results. You would think that you would want a lawyer result over a directory, especially.
It's an interesting facet from Google, right? Like, it's an interesting play that they made. And I have probably for 10 years been wrong about my answer to this question. And the question is, does Google not want so many search results showing up in the in the results that are directories? And yet they clearly do, right? They clearly want more search results showing up.
Or that they just haven't tweaked the algorithm. One thing that everybody, whenever I complain about things like local, or the other option I always had was that if they were ever worried about antitrust, is that one of those areas that they were trying to give a tip of the hat to other people so that they wouldn't, lawyers are the place where you'd see the most of that action. Was this one of these to be more, hey, we're making our money, now let these guys make theirs?
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a possibility, but like, I mean, you've seen this over time. 4 to 6, 7 of the results are directories.
Right.
Right. And so a couple of things happened for me with that. Directories clearly can outlink build
everybody,
law firms.
Right.
So the fact that there's not 10 directories, right, suggests that Google's deliberately going to show some level of diversity in those results.
Or to be fair, it's generally the FU directories. You don't generally see ones that are there by happenstance. It's generally the top few directories.
Yeah. Which so to me, it looks like for directories, they rely heavily on backlink algo.
Right.
And for non-direct, and because there are things that are non-directory showing up, they have to rely on other signals there. Right. So they're looking for different types of business. But again, like I remain flummoxed, frustrated, annoyed by the fact that, you know, A, SEO is kind of now at the very, very bottom, and B, you're probably going to look at 3 to 5 law firms showing up in those for the head terms, tops, and that sucks.
Right.
And it surprises me, and I keep saying that it's going to change, and I've been wrong forever, so like...
But as you know, when you put your heart and soul into it for your clients, you're able to be in that mix. To me, that's the home run. DC, like my pride and joy of a criminal, when we're above the directories, I know that, hey, I'm doing something right. And that's one of those great, you know, that's how you sort of can tell that you're doing SEO at a pretty elite level.
Correct. Correct. And those, you know, it's if you can compete with the resources that I had while I was at Avvo, you're doing pretty well, right?
Well, talk to me about what were some of the things you tried there that didn't work, that you said, hey, I can't imagine this wouldn't work, but it, you know, or were there things, or was it, were you on such a platform?
No. I wasn't uniquely genius. I will tell you something that I thought would suck that didn't, that I fought tooth and nail and I was completely wrong on. And that was the answers product, Q&A. So we called it, at the time I spent a ton of time optimizing for the phrase free legal advice, right? And I owned free legal advice for like 4 years at Avvo. And that did a couple of things. One, it generated a ton of inbound content. And two, it generated a ton of engagement and a ton of business for lawyers. And if you had told me that lawyers would take the time to answer questions on a directory like Avvo and generate business from doing so, I was dead set against it. And I was totally wrong. I don't know the numbers here, but there was a time when, I mean, if you look at the traffic that went into Avvo, it started out with name search, right? It was really, really heavily on name search. And I did a lot of work to optimize. I know more about name search than anyone ever should. And then when this Q&A thing came out, it turned into this question and answer directory where we had more content about the law that was well SEO optimized than pretty much anywhere else because we were relying on user generated content, and it just exploded. And it got to a point where the volume, the number of pages became not just unmanageable, but it had a negative SEO impact because, I don't know how off color your podcast is. So just apologies for where we're going on this. If you have sensitive ears, give me 30 seconds. That we ran into this big problem where people were asking the same questions, and the question that happened, I mean, we had hundreds of thousands of pages that looked like this. I'm 18, my girlfriend's 16, can we have sex? Right? Like over and over and over again. And so what you end up happening with there is tons of very, very thin content, like thousands, hundreds of thousands of pages of very thin content. So we had to go through this curation project where we were actually minimizing the number of pages instead of growing the number of pages.
Well, and look, and it's sort of what you're seeing now with like Facebook groups where somebody joins the group and asks that question, name your affinity group. I see it all over the place where there's this problem where you don't want to be, oh, that's the same question again, and it comes back through it. One of the things I felt like in one sense, it was ideal timing. The blog phenomenon was sort of peaking and people were looking for something that wasn't as much of a buy-in as a lawyer as creating a blog or to write long form content, but could connect directly with people. And so for all the people that weren't willing to geek out on a blog platform, this became, oh, I don't need to they didn't call it this. I don't have to SEO my own site, but if I answer something well here, you know, in my spare time, I'm able to add value. That's going to bring me business. And it worked.
Yeah. I mean, so the reality is, I mean, a blog is, it's just content on the web.
Understood.
And you could basically, as a lawyer, leverage Avvo's SEO strength by publishing that content on the Avvo site, as opposed to your own blog.
Exactly.
And so it really was an interesting time where, I mean, this got bananas, Seth. We were getting lawyers. I don't know if you know this, but we had lawyers paying us to get access to the questions an hour before anyone else did. That was part of the model. I think, and I may get the details roughly right, but I believe one of the things that we did with Avvo Pro is you got the question, you got like Mary submits a question on Avvo about car accidents in Sheboygan. You're a car accident lawyer in Sheboygan. You get the email about that question an hour before everyone else does. right? I think it was when we did Avo Prime, but like it was bananas and people were making tons of money and they were doing really, really well in this, right? The people who adopted Avo early made out like bandits, and the people who hated it, right?
Well, right. And then over time they said, hey, we got to make some money from it. And you sort of started to see, well, there was some value still in the Q&A. It wasn't like there was none, you know, and this is sort of during the time and it got worse after you left, but it became much more of a pay to play service.
Well, I mean, Avo was venture capital backed. They sold nicely. I'm personally happy about that. I'm kind of sad to see where they've gone since that happened. But the you know, they were looking to monetize.
Right. And well, of course. And it's
at some point in time, and I suspect lots of businesses get to this inflection point where you let the money supersede the value, and you have to be very, very careful about that. And
it happens in every industry. Friend of mine, ZocDocs, he was getting appointments for $50 a pop. Next thing you know, it's 300. You know, then there's that, you know, like anything else, it'll balance out to a market rate at some point.
Well, usually, right? So supply and demand being what they are, it makes the potentially fallacious assumption, especially with lawyers, that you guys are making rational decisions.
Right.
And that's not always the case.
Absolutely.
And the dumbest example of that, and I think you guys have been like, you live in a win-loss world. You went to school where you're graded on a curve. Everyone wants to be at the top. And being at the top of Google Ads is very, very expensive. And in order to do that effectively, your cost per client becomes so bad or so expensive that you have to have what I will call the Walmart of legal, where you're a volume producer and efficient because the cost of acquiring that client is so high. And you can't therefore do some types of law that you otherwise would.
Well, and look, that's why I think both of us love the SEO space and other digital marketing like pay-per-click, because you're able to get returns and not be at the whim of those venture capitalists. Now, Google is, pick your poison, right? Venture capitalists or Google. You know, neither are great, but the thing that historically has been great about SEO is that you just were able to get eyeballs at prices that, you know, $1,000 CPM is not something that is, you know, a great place to be.
Right. And I mean, where we're going with this conversation, Seth, is too few attorneys have a good, sophisticated handling of their costs, right? There's lots of software out there to try and help you do that. There's the lawyers know they should try and figure this out. They don't trust any of the vendors, right? And the vendors by and large have earned that lack of trust. We've worked really hard as an industry, Seth, to destroy any perspective of trust that you might have with us. And so
it's funny you say that, because that was what people said to me when I was morphing from, you know, lawyer alone into a digital agency owner and lawyer, was that how are you going to differentiate yourself from all that? And that's sort of like been the, I think I look at you the same way, like, everything you have to do is to show, hey, I'm not this, that this is what's here. I'm adding the transparency. We make a lot less money. Our multiples are not as good, but we're able to provide value in a way that at scale, venture-backed, is just much, much harder to do.
Well, I think if we were venture-backed, we were looking at, if you have a business or at least an agency that's objective is to maximize profit within a time frame, you are screwing your clients. I say it to clients all the time, right? Like, as soon as you sign a long-term contract with me, right? Like, I maximize my profit by doing as little for you as possible. The key for me where this becomes difficult, especially in the legal agency world right now, is there is so much garbage out there, and lawyers are spending so much money on so much crap. I mean, the amount of, and where the crap is coming from is just kind of exploded in terms of the level of sophistication among people who call themselves, and this is, I said earlier, I'm arrogant, right? So this is gonna come across as super arrogant, but the level of sophistication of people who consider themselves to be experts is just absolutely mind-blowing, right? It's terrible. And so there are a lot of lawyers wasting a lot of money on a lot of people who have no business doing what they're doing.
Well, you know, talk to me. Why leave Avo? It seemed like a pretty cool place. You're top of the world. Everything's going well. I remember when you made the move, it was kind of like, oh, what was the thought process there?
This is a really cutesy MBA answer, but I also mean it. When I was doing Avo, we did a lot of education. We were doing social media marketing before that was actually called a thing. But it was all around educating and sharing how SEO works, what it is, what email marketing is, like how to do it, what canned spam is, like all of these, like what you and I would now consider kind of basic fundamentals. We marketed, or I marketed Avo heavily by pushing that education to lawyers. And I loved it. You know me. There's nothing, this sounds super twisted when I say it out loud. There's nothing that makes me happier professionally than sitting in front of a bunch of lawyers and talking about what we do.
Well, and I've seen it. I've seen you get on a red eye, get up, get off the red eye, give a speech, have a beer, and get back on the plane to go home. I mean,
Yeah.
there's nobody who is sort of like Seattle, and you plotted yourself in the country for legal marketing. It couldn't be a less convenient spot in the continental.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's what I like
What you
doing. It's
love.
what I
I get
love.
it.
I love it. But so to answer your question, we got too big for that, right? And I tried to do things that were really focused around educating and teaching lawyers. So I'm an immigrant. My old man started a business here. My wife runs a business here. I run a business here. I can trace entrepreneurialness back through my family. And I love the enterprise, right? I love the enterprising individual. I love helping people. I love small businesses winning. I just wrote my holiday card, and one of my lines in there is like, why is our stock market booming while small businesses are closing, right? That is systemically not right. So I love these enterprising, entrepreneurial, growth-oriented people who happen to be lawyers in my
And I
life.
feel you, because that first conference back in Seattle at that
Oh,
little,
yeah.
that was, I still goes down, and Mark goes, because I remind him of it every time, as one of the greatest conferences ever held. There were people inside of like Google and Bing search there. They didn't send their ad sales guys. You
Nope.
know, you had Justia there. You had Tim giving
Tim
like one of
Stanley.
the greatest sort of keynotes of what was going on in the state. There was more knowledge being shared. And I cried a number of years later when I would go, and it was like, it was sale of how to leverage your
It was
profile.
pitch fest.
And
Yeah. It was,
it
so
was just, it,
that conference was like, so that was my, I again, I'm going to come across as arrogant. That was my thing, my idea, my whole positioning for Avo in the legal community was around thought leadership of online marketing. And that conference was awesome.
It
It
was
wasn't
literally
called
that. I mean, again,
Lawyernomics.
and it was sadly, I mean, again, part of it evolved, and you had salespeople involved. I mean,
Yep.
this was purely, at a time when it was the intersection of SEO or digital and legal marketing. It was sort of that apex at the point where you were like, you were actually getting two people who were showing you inside how
Yeah.
things were done.
Yeah. That was a great conference. And this, you're right. Tim Stanley's SEO talk like blew my mind,
I looked at the notes the
right?
other day. Half of it
I
still
know.
stands.
I know. So, but it was things like that where like, I wish all of the crap that lawyers get exposed to and advertised to on Facebook and everywhere and every single conference they go to, like it has become such a perverted, prostituted, pay-for-play game that it's really hard for a lawyer to actually learn something of value.
So what does a lawyer do? You're getting constantly inundated with, but whether it's online or whether, how does a lawyer sift through that? I mean, you can
I
find your
think
trusted relationship, but
I think the key here, the really this is going to sound very counterintuitive to everything I just said. You need to move away from trying to understand the nuances of the marketing. Unless you're really, really into it, unless you're really deeply nerdy, unless you want to talk about H1s and canonicals and stay up on all that stuff, which I do, but like I don't think most lawyers should. I think what a lawyer should do is run their own reporting accurately, review it, and don't get kind of bamboozled by the stuff that we tell you that we're doing, because we try and make ourselves look good. Now, and you know this, running your own business. Like let me go back to Avo. I'll pick on Avo. Avo would tell you about the number of searches that they had for what you do. What they really meant was page views, right?
Right.
Different things. Let me give you another example. This is a very common example that agencies do all the time, and it's disgusting. We will report to you, the lawyer, that we generated 27 phone calls for you last month, right? And so we'll report on these things and we'll tell you how things are going, but we're counting every single phone call to you. Even though our reporting infrastructure, we can just count the first time callers, right? But we know that our job is to try and make us look good, so you'll continue to spend money with us. And the lawyer is left at the end of the day, the end of the month, being like, damn it, I got 52 phone calls according to this agency, and yet here I am, business is down again.
Yeah, but look, the good news is the technology has caught up to that. Things like CallRail, it's pretty easy to tell what's what within reason. Again,
so my point is the lawyers should learn to tell what's what.
If you just listen to your CallRail, that would be half of it.
If you listen to your CallRail, if you know how to report, if you know what's coming in, if you have an honest, accurate, and efficient assessment of that, you don't need to know what NAP is. You don't need to get into the vagaries of LSAs or local or this, that, or the other thing. And you don't get bamboozled by people like me.
Well, right. But look, there are people, I would argue that there are two, you know, yes, of course you don't want to be bamboozled. You pick a horse and you're running with it, and you should obviously trust but verify, to quote Mr. Reagan. That said, to me, one of the things that has become harder and harder, and that Avo, I think, rode a very long wave on, is you don't always know where stuff is coming from. People are doing searches. They may see your website. They may get to Avo. They see you there. They saw you in the paid search, even though they may or may not have clicked on it. And that little community that you've created of showing where you are, what I loved is when people got to our intake and said, oh yeah, you're everywhere. That's to me. So, you know, that's one of those things that it's so freaking hard to measure. You know, when you look at some of the juggernauts in the space, remember, right, John Morgan didn't use tracking numbers. He had his one gold number that he loved. And, you know, he's like, look, I don't know where the money is coming from, but it's working in all different directions. To me, you've got to be careful, because you can track really well a lot of stuff, but you can also then throttle, and not that you should ignore it. You need to take that into account. And I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, but there you can, I think, almost over track in the sense that if you're putting those different, you know, I call throwing spaghetti at the wall, fishing lines, whatever your analogy is, if you're right, doing all of that and it's coming back together, that is something that's almost impossible to fully track.
Well, so I've come full circle on this. There are, you and I could sit down and talk about what's called multi-touch attribution modeling, right? Which basically says someone's seen my ads here. They've seen my billboards there. They've heard me on TV. They did SEO searches. They clicked on a Google Ads thing. And finally they called me from an LSA. Now there are different models. You have first touch attribution, which is I'm going to track the first time someone connected with me. You have last touch attribution, which means I'm going to give all the credit to the last one. My personal is the 40-20-40, where you give 40 to the first, 40 to the second, then you split all the rest of it up in the middle. Here's the thing. That is always wrong. It is always 100% wrong. So why the hell go through the process of doing that? It is just MBA garbage that doesn't work. So I really have come full circle on this, where I was trying to come up with these modelings and these different attribution models. We started working with HubSpot because it does a great job of actually pulling everything together, and you can apply these different, there's a U model and a V model. There's all sorts of models, and they're all wrong, right? So ultimately, I brought in this guy recently named Matt Moore. He used to run online marketing for Sears. He's now working with me at Mockingbird. And what he said was, when he went to Sears, he eventually realized it actually is a very, very blunt instrument. So all of our revenue, all of our marketing costs, now we know our cost pers, right? And the reality is that is the case. There are some things that are linear, right? There are some things where it's like the LSAs, for example. You have a need, you look for that need, you make a call, you hire that attorney. There are some things that are more linear. There are some things that are less linear. Obviously billboards are much less linear, but overall, getting a feel for your cost per client. Is that going up? Is that going down? And a John Morgan who's spending, you know, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on television, they're not tracking this down to the channel. They're just not.
Right. So some of the smaller players can and do, you know, but I would argue that it's just, as going to your point, even if you could get it, it's a short-term number compared to, I think I saw you at an SMX Chicago like a decade ago. Yeah. And I remember there was a keynote speaker from Google and he was talking about like Carnival Cruise and the number of touches before somebody booked a, yeah. And I was like, oh no, that's not the case. Legally, just calling the, which to a certain extent was true then, but I am now finding so many more touches and start and stops where we are not even pretending to have the resources to the person who searches at night and then the next morning at work resumes the search, you know, the chat that came in the night before and the phone call comes in the next morning. It is definitely, you know, and the fact that you have the phone and the iPad at night, that people really are, you know, it is getting harder and harder. And I keep pushing more and more towards that because look, as agencies, we would get under, like, so in one sense, you're afraid about agencies that oversell what they're doing. I think it's often you could be underselling what you're doing as an agency because there are all these extra touches that you're putting together.
And you're exactly right. One of the things that you miss if you were to take my MBA answer is like, oh, well, because I can't touch, we used to say like, if you can't measure it, why the hell would you do it? Well, that's actually a really, really short-sighted thing because we all know intuitively, and if you look at the marketing literature, you know this empirically, that the more you touch, like if you see 68 ads for a Whopper, you're more likely to buy a Whopper. If you see one, you're not, right? So we know this. This is not new. It's not new. It's not new data. It's not new theory. But because we can't tie four or five or six of those impressions of the Whopper back to buying the Whopper, we're not going to do it. That's stupid. It is a miss. The branding side of this, I used to be really anti-branding, and I'm really coming around to that because the value of the branding becomes really, really important. And then you have like what's just like utterly dull branding, but the value of keeping that name in front of clients. So that people, I bet you do this really well at Price Benowitz. You continue to stay in touch with past clients, right? Why?
Because I mean, that's a whole nother conversation about, you know, that the referrals have always been, that's a truism. That's true. That the referrals.
But how do you stay in touch with them?
We email, we call, we do everything we can.
And it's branding, right? You're not saying, hey, did you get in another?
Oh, no. It's just keeping top of mind. It's social, it's everything
who
else.
I am. Don't forget who I am. And you try and model that, good luck. Right. Good luck. It doesn't work.
Very cool. Look, I want to pivot for a minute. So you leave Avvo, you're now on your own. You got Mockingbird and you're taking on the world. You have very vocally sort of taken on some of the biggest players in the space. You know, my opinion, rightly so. There are a lot of people out there that are selling things that when we look as an SEO and I look under the hood at what some of these larger proprietary CMSs are running, it's crazy. There are people selling SEO without content and links. You see these things over and over again. I mean, to me, I am, you know, we always say you should do what you enjoy. You clearly enjoy this and are very good at pointing out the hypocrisy in these areas. Talk to me about this adventure you've been on and some of the sort of the ups and downs you've had with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this goes back to my Avvo days. And part of the reason I went out on my own and run this agency was I was just so sick and tired of watching people get screwed. It's probably not even the grossest example, but one of the grossest examples was, you know, when you would get a company that would register the domain to themselves.
Right.
So, okay, I'm FineLaw. I'm going to set you up with your website, but I'm going to register to myself. And then I'm going to contractually make sure that the content on that belongs to me, right? Like you're now renting a website.
You're renting your website.
You're renting your own website, which can then be turned around and sold back to your
Anybody.
Competitor, yeah. Right? And I remember, I don't know if you remember, well, I'm sure you do. They had the Google authorship, right? They were selling previous, I don't know if it was FineLaw. So let me be clear while I'm bashing people. There was a big firm I can't go back to my memory, I can't remember exactly who, but who was selling the previously established authorship and then just changing the name. It was bananas. It was crazy. So there's all sorts of ways. I published a guide called the Escape Fine Law Guide, the guidebook to Escape Fine Law. I published that. And I watched with Google Analytics, like Minnesota just blew up. Eden, Minnesota, which is where the Fine Law headquarters are. And I was getting like 300 people at a time looking at my site. And I was like, oh boy. But the reality is they didn't have their clients' best interest at heart. They just didn't.
But I also, as an agency owner, the thing that I thought when I came, oh, we'll clean house. Everybody from Fine Law will want to escape. And I'm amazed, forget about the proprietary stuff for a second. I'm amazed at just how well some of those larger groups have done at sort of a combination of different elements, but keeping people in doing things that are not necessarily in their best interest.
Well, listen, this is a relationship business, right? That you mentioned me getting on the plane. I pre-COVID, I'm traveling 3 or 4 times a month, right? And I'm meeting with people and it's a relationship business. The model for Fine Law is, you know, they've got people distributed all around the country who are in law firm offices all the time, taking you out to lunch. They've got a personal relationship. And I can't, you've heard this too, I'm sure. Hey, my Fine Law, I don't love Fine Law, but boy, you know, Jason is just awesome.
It's unbelievable. And they paid them really well.
Because, you know, we have steak with Jason, you know, once a quarter and maybe we do this or we do that. And like, you know, it's Fine Law. So like they've been around for a while. Good Lord. And so, lawyers, for God's sake, right?
But I think all these larger corporate groups, and some of them were small and became larger, it was partially the getting in the door at a lower dollar, getting the relationship, and just adding things on top. Again, I have been amazed at how people, relationship or otherwise, you know, lack of wanting to change in early so that any benefit, like getting in early was a good thing no matter what. But it is one of those things that I am always amazed at the sort of reluctance to leave those hives, especially when you see the actual numbers behind it.
Well, I mean, you mentioned seeing the actual numbers behind it. I think one of the ways that the big box providers keep their clients around is they don't show them the actual numbers behind it. So if you are a client of an agency that won't let you see your Google ad spend, you are crazy. So let me give a very simple way that agencies screw their clients. I can bid on Price Benowitz, right? Which would probably cost me $3 a click. Or I could bid on Car Accident Lawyer DC, which will probably cost me $93 a click. If you don't have access to that data, I can pass off my $3 a click to you for $93 Car Accident Lawyer, right? And I'm not lying to you.
I lived it. I somehow got a hold. I did a test.
Yeah.
$500 behind Yodel back in the day.
Okay.
And they were bidding on stuff like Star of David from my partner, David Benowitz. I mean, I you looked at it and you were just like, and forget about the fact that, you know, to me, and I think you gave me these words of advice a long time ago when those guys were coming up, the Reach Locals and the Yodels,
yeah,
which was, if they're not going to tell you what their ad spend is, right? Google AdWords, as you know, we could talk about that for an entire 2 hours, yeah, is so competitive. And there's, you know, once you're playing in the, you know, in a, you know, out of, when you're in the big leagues, right?
Right.
And you know the basics, right? You got your quality right. score and you got your negative keywords and you have your campaign set up well. The margin is not great enough that if you were to give away half your ad spend, that you could make that up with technology. I just don't buy that. And so that when, and it, at points, it was, the question was, it could be more than that. So when they have this black box that I'm going to give you money and you'll tell me what I'll get, to me, like, you know, I think it was you who said this. It's like, you could go out and investigate. It's easier said than done because these people don't really exist. But at the time we thought they did. You could find the number one AdWord guy in the world and he'd probably charge you 20%. Now the world's changed and those guys who are that good don't touch smaller campaigns. But back in the day, they did. So it was one of those weird moments where you were just like, I don't care how amazing you are. If you're charging me over 25 cents on the dollar, something's not right.
Well, I mean, that's where, like, and especially at volume.
Right.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. Again, micro level, I'm taking that off because so much of it is just, you know, you can only do so much. There's a cost to setting up a campaign at the very basic level. But after you're out of that, when you're spending $5, $10, $15,000 a month, there's absolutely no reason for that.
Well, and here's the thing. This is where this gets insanely gross and nefarious and why I like this is a very self-promotional concept, but it works for Blue Shark as well. If you have a client, if you have an agency that is working for the guy across the street in a pay-per-click ecosystem, and they will not let you into that ecosystem.
How do you know what the hell's going on?
What are they doing? And my bias, and I say this because if you go look on ZipRecruiter or something like that, and go look for Scorpion data scientist or Internet Brands data scientist. These large big box providers are hiring data scientists. And what happens, Seth, and this is gross, they optimize for the system as opposed to the client. So they are looking at data across everything. And I'm not saying it's not effective. It's amazingly effective. But if they're running data across everyone, they are playing for the highest paid client. Right. And they're optimizing for their system as opposed to for their individual clients. And I think and the reason we know this is because they won't let you in behind the door to see what they're doing in Google Ads. And that is crazy.
It's a fascinating world. And, you know, one of those things that, you know, when you get that sales pitch from these larger organizations, if you're number 8 of 10 in a market, like, who's fighting for you? Do they have different sales reps that sit in their own silos and are each bidding against each other?
No, and they don't, right? And by the way, I'm not maligning their abilities. They're great. They have very, very smart people. They're looking at tons of data. They're optimizing. You have to ask yourself, do they have your best interest at heart? And the answer to that is, I don't know. I really don't know. I'll give you, so you've got Scorpion, big provider, FindLaw, big provider, Internet Brands, which has now picked up a whole bunch of different, sub brands, including Avvo, another big provider. They're looking at the data game as opposed to their individual clients. And that just should give every single person pause.
Very interesting. So what excites you? What are the things out there right now? If you're a law firm, what are the things that you'd be sort of saying, hey, you got to double down on this?
So obviously the LSAs, which also come across as Google screened, it's a pain in the butt.
Do you think the Google screened will ever drop into the 3-PAP, the Mac pack, as a way of sort of getting rid of the filtered?
There are many nuances to that question that you just asked. And I will tell you, I mistakenly had a perspective of Google screen when it started. I thought that's exactly what it was there for. They're determining whether or not you actually can practice law,
right?
Whether or not you have insurance, if you're actually a lawyer, which has been like absolutely perverting the local search results. And so I initially, when they rolled this out, I thought it was to make sure that they were actually firms in local. They have said very explicitly that it's not. And that little green checkbox very explicitly, not only does it not show up if you run out of your budget, but it won't show up anywhere outside of that Google screen ad. So the answer is, so that's part one of my answer. Part two of my answer is, if you look, there is now a hook between the two. Okay. So Google now knows in your Google My Business listing whether or not you are actually licensed to practice law in that area. So it would be very easy to improve the results, to ensure that only people who actually had a law degree showed up in the local results for legal. It would be very easy. Having said that, I don't think it's going to happen. And here's why. Google goes out of their way to separate church and state, paid and non-paid. And so I don't see them perverting that. I don't see them changing that anytime soon.
Well, you know, again, we'll move back to this in a moment. But one of the things that I've talked to a lot of guests on the show about is, you know, the fact that Google has such a debacle with the local search, with a three pack, where spam is so pervasive. You've fought it for years. You've written about it. And we, you know, we've had Joy and others on here talk about it. I have yet to get a good answer, you know, other than they're making so much money, they don't care. Google's smart enough. They had spam and organic years ago. Map Cuts figured out how to cut it out. You don't mess around with it. You can still do it, but you're going to get slapped eventually. What do you see here? Because it is getting worse, not better. There've been articles written about it, which is normally the turning point. Normally the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, expose on something, eyeglass store, world changes, the mugshots article, big article, world changes. We're not seeing that here. They could put a minimum of three reviews. They could do something to the local algorithm and just nothing has happened.
Yeah. So the minimum of three reviews won't work because reviews are a bunch of bullshit.
No, but a minimum of reviews so that, again, right now, that is a
very small hurdle to jump if you're trying to
say it is, but it's not nothing. And right now that's most of the spam reviews listings we're seeing are not playing that game. Would force another.
So I will tell you what I know about Google and legal, and this does not come from Google. It comes from outside of Google. Did you watch the Clio conference?
Parts of it, yeah.
You see their big integration announcement with Clio Grow,
right?
Gives Clio a huge leg up, right? Basically, you can book appointments directly through Clio Grow in your GMB profile, and you can manage your GMB profile through Clio Grow, right? Big deal, massive. Right. They spent a lot of time digging deep into legal when they rolled out they're getting deep into Clio. When they rolled out the LSAs, they got deep. Google went and talked to and dealt with state bars to find out what the requirements are to be a licensed lawyer at the state level.
Although ironically, my co-host on Max Growth Live, Jay Ruane, he couldn't get it up or it got taken down. Google was using the voluntary bar, not the actual required bar so it's not perfect.
They did it well.
But they were making the phone calls. They were trying.
They have individual requirements for that. Now, if you also go deeper into the LSAs, look at how they have LSAs categorized. There are all sorts of categories, florists, beauticians, blah, 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 blah. The only category, the only industry that's broken out by, in our term, practice area is legal. Right. They're not looking at different flavors.
Well, there's real money involved.
There's huge money there. So my point being, Seth, Google is getting, if you asked me 2 years ago, I still say this in many cases, Google looks at and treats lawyers like restaurants. They think of you guys as a restaurant, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think that has changed in the last 9 months.
Meaning that there's real cash here.
Well, I think they've known that there's real cash here. They just haven't gone into it.
But given all of that and given the user experience, so your LSAs, you're double dipping, right? You got your LSAs, you got your paid, you have this one piece of real estate, super valuable. Why would you allow spam to permeate like the featured part of your page? Even if I know you want to get your clicks up top to make money, but if people come and see crap, like, again, it's not like, look, they forced everybody else out. So it's not like there's like, here's somebody else is going to come in and do it.
They're not actually. So go back to the user. This is a super cynical answer. Go back to the user experience. Okay. I look for car accident lawyer, Oklahoma. I click on a link in local because it's important to me that someone's local. They've got a bunch of good-ish reviews. So I'm like, okay. I click on the link. I get to a site that looks like an attorney website. I fill out a form where I pick up the phone. A really nice person takes in my information. Now, in the background, that then gets sold to like seven different law firms at as much as whomever will purchase it. And like that gets kind of filtered into the results. But ultimately, I might not even know. I probably don't know that I've clicked on what's not actually a real business. And so you're not getting this big outcry. You're just not.
So, you know, look, we could talk about this for forever. So I think that, you know, in the interest of not going too long, I think we're going to have you back to continue this conversation because you and I, you know, if we weren't recording for this, we'd probably talk for another 2 or 3 hours, but you know, I appreciate it. I've over the years loved your enthusiasm. I've seen you speak probably 3 dozen times, but I still sit there and take notes and learn stuff. So you have made the journey of legal marketing that much more fun and exciting. And the fact that you're willing to take on some of these behemoths and really poke, legitimately so. You know, I come with this conservative law school background where I'm just like, leave me alone. But I admire it. And I feel that like the industry is better for you having done that.
Well, to come back full circle, you know, I one of my early jobs at Avvo, I took the angriest calls when the when we had this customer service woman. She's a great lady named Kristen. But when she was like, I can't deal with this now, I got those calls. Right. And honestly, it was in a really sick, twisted way. I really enjoyed it. And you know, I kind of understand where it's appropriate to poke and where it's appropriate to push back. And like, I'm not going to be bullied, right? I'm just not going to be bullied. And that has, I think my going back again, full circle, going back, that training of talking to angry lawyers for like 4 years, right? My profile, you know, I got yelled out on a bus by someone because I had an Avvo shirt on, right? Turn that into a rational conversation. Like I liked it. It's twisted.
Yeah. But you know what? Something that they did well, you know, Josh King's role there and the fact that this was the one place that when something crazy hit your profile, they'd actually write the person back and say, hey, are you sure you meant this? That's all you want as a lawyer. You just want to make sure it's not a bot. It's not like, it's not your client who's off their meds, who's fine the next day. And that, to me, the fact that that original core team with Mark, you, Josh, and others, you know, put so much thought, I think that's one of the reasons it was so successful and took off is that it was a community.
Right. No, it was. I mean, we did, again, I mentioned this earlier. We were doing social media marketing before it was
a thing,
right? Before it was a thing. And it works. It really does work.
Well, to be continued, we're going to definitely have to have you back on here and continue this conversation because I've loved every minute of it.
I will dig up, if you want to have me back, I will dig up my old Avvo soccer team t-shirt and we'll put that on that's if awesome. It still fits, which is a stretch.
So I will not say goodbye, but I will say to be continued.
Thanks, Seth.
Be good.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.